Welcome to the Round 1 Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2017. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day mate, it was great to have footy back on the weekend and Bombers won. Very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Certainly was great to have footy back, mate, and have that lockout period finished as well. I don't know about you, but I definitely was ruining decisions way, way later than I normally like to. And I was just looking forward to lockout, and the team sheets just kept delivering new pieces of information. Thurlow out, and then Swallow out, and then Thurlow back. It was all sorts of hectic, and looking forward to the fact that my team's basically locked away. We've had round one. Prices don't move until a couple more games are played, so this is generally the week to sit on our hands, and I'm appreciating that feeling, Mark.
Yeah, I think if you go back and listen to the previous 8 years of doing a round one podcast, they would all pretty much say, don't trade, just get one another week's worth of information.
So, Mark, this week we're going to cover injured players, underperformers, and tempting trade-in targets. But again, want to emphasize that we're wanting to talk about players because we want to reveal our team. We want to keep the show going. It's too early to take a break, but we generally do not recommend trading. So the best thing you can generally do before price movements is sit on your hands. You've spent weeks making a decision, and it's a bit much to reverse it after only one game of history. So with that sort of attitude in mind, we'll jump into the personal update, and then after that, we'll jump straight into the show. So, Mark, let's talk about what teams we finally locked ourselves out with and how we scored for the first round of 2017. Why don't you start us off, mate?
Okay, so my team, I had Shaw, Adams and Doherty as my three back premiums. It was Shaw versus Laird there was a big decision I was making there, and I went with Shaw. There was only 30 points in it first week and Shaw scored 118, so I can't complain, even though Laird went nuts. I got Marchbank at D4. That looks pretty good. Hampton was a bit disappointing. Then I got Andy Otten, Stewart, and Hibbard on the bench. Not confident on Hibbard at this stage. And Otten even started the game really well on the weekend, but sort of went missing for a long period as well. But hopefully he stays in the side. Midfielders, I went Danger, Rocky, Fife, Selwood, Treloar, Beams, Swallow, and Powell Pepper on field. And then Bowes, Barrett, and Pickett on the bench. Went Treloar over Pendles, which I think we advocated on the preseason shows. I know it costs 50 points week one, but it's not going to cost 50 points every week, that's for sure. Pretty happy with Rockliffe, the pod, in the end. He had 12 possessions in the last quarter, scored 137. Obviously, Swallow is a bit of an issue, but I'm sure we'll get to that. In the rucks, I went Sanderlands and Witts. I think that we said pretty clearly that that's how we were going to go, Marcus. I'm assuming you went the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I went Strenodica on the bench. I was going to have Cameron there. Cameron may end up playing this week, but Sydney plays so many early games and Fremantle plays so many late games early in the season, especially, that I really figured that I'd get more points out of the loophole. In the forward line, I went Nankervis, McRae, Paddy Ryder, a bit of a unique selection, Dalhouse, Hoskin Elliott, Taranto, Florent on the bench, and Brett Eddy. Pretty happy with the forward selections. I know McRae probably scored slightly under what you'd hope. Ryder was slightly under what you'd hope. Dalhouse was a bit under. So, look, I think that there's a lot of improvement left in my team. I think probably the more unique players I've got are Ryder, McRae, Selwood, Treloar a little bit, Rockliffe, and Doherty. So those guys are probably going to be the most important players for me week to week. Week one, things just didn't really go right. Like I said, like players were just scoring sort of 90s instead of like 105, 120s, and maybe missed a couple of the bigger scores. So ranking was pretty bad week one. I scored 21, 42, ranking about 40,000. Really not panicking at all. Like I just have a sense of calm. I really just feel like I got my selections right. And that they'll come good, I guess. The ones that probably stood out were Jack Steele. Want to have another look at him this week. He looked really good. not having Heppel in my team, who was in there for a lot of the preseason, and he just didn't show anything in the whole preseason. So, and even though he's a gun and you don't expect him to, I just wanted to see something to make me pick him. Did score 3 goals on the weekend and won't do that every week, but sort of wish I had him in my side. Yeah, that was sort of the main issues. And I guess Swallow, like, I was at the Essendon game a quarter time. I logged on and saw that Swallow was out, and it gave me about 2 minutes to sort of change my team around and bring Bowers onto the field. So, yeah, it was just a really unlucky with the order of games with Swallow, because if Gold Coast had played early, there was heaps and heaps of options that you could have traded Swallow to, but because they played so late and there wasn't much time to make a decision, that left him in my team. So hopefully he plays this week. Saw that you went a little bit better than me, mate.
Yeah, I did a little bit better. To be honest, when I look at our teams, they don't feel vastly different. And I compared my team to somebody who scored 150 points more than me, and I couldn't see much difference either. So from a structural point of view, I do agree, Mark. I don't think much panic is needed to be had at this early stage. I'm relatively happy with how things have gone. And based on what I've seen from our community and others out there, I would relay those similar sentiments to everyone. The quality of Supercoach seems to rise year to year, Mark. It's harder to break into the top 10,000. And in the first week, especially, you know, with most people starting with strong teams these days, it's really hard to stick your neck out until really trades become more of a factor. That's really what separates the sort of veteran super coaches from the newer players, Mark.
Yeah, it does. You're sort of looking at least 5 or 6 rounds before you get a feel of how you're actually going, and then you've still got opportunities to fix it, like you said. But I think there's like 100 points difference between 40,000 and 10,000, so that will obviously change as time goes on. So it's not going to be one good week and I'm right back in it.
Yeah, exactly right. So I scored 22-34, which is actually almost 100 points more than you, Mark. But like I said, when I look at my team, they look pretty damn similar. So I think the main differences to note are that I did not start a midfield rookie, whereas you did. And I have 3 forward rookies, whereas you only have 2. So in the back line, the only difference between you and I is I've picked Tui. So I know I was against Tui pretty much the entire preseason, but I was really struggling to pick between Shaw and Doherty. And at the end of the day, my love for value premiums kind of got Tui over the line there. And to be honest, the main thing that I looked at with Tui is his scores last year when he had 20 or more disposals. In those games, he scored 100-plus on most of those occasions. And purely off that, I picked Tui. I don't expect him to average under the 20 disposal mark playing for Geelong instead of Carlton. We heard Dangerfield say that they're going to use him at every opportunity. I don't know how true that necessarily is, but I think he shouldn't see enough of increase in disposal that he seems to do enough with it that I hope he can average premium type numbers. So 102 after week one, and I can't complain. Actually, no, I got that wrong, Mark. You have Shaw and Doherty, whereas I have Laird. So actually, I started Laird, whereas you didn't. So I'm happy with that early on. I had Laird and Adams locked for most of the preseason, if not all of it. And I'm a little bit surprised, Mark, you didn't end up with Laird, because I thought you had Laird locked too.
I did for a lot of the preseason. It was him versus Shaw, like I said, and I just ended up with extra money. So I went with Shaw. So yeah, I don't expect Laird to average 150 for the season, so I'm sure things will even out.
I'm sure they will as well, and not having Shaw definitely worries me, because Shaw scored 200 before, which Laird has not, so Shaw can definitely help you out.
Doherty could also significantly improve. Like, he got 91, and he went missing in the last quarter, so there's a lot of improvement in Doherty left as well.
Yeah. After week one, though, Laird and Tui somehow managed to outscore Shaw and Doherty. So I'll take that for now. But nervous times, definitely not having them, Mark. And they're sort of my first trade-in target. So, yeah, you must be pretty happy starting with 2 premium guns in your back line. In the midfield, the differences between my team and yours are I'm running Mitchell and O'Meara. So I managed to get Swallow off my field. I was originally running Tom Lynch and Swallow. So I swapped it around and ran Jack Bowers and Tom Rockliffe instead. So that was my pivot. I skipped Pendlebury as well. Main reason being he cost $40,000 more than a lot of other premium mids that I liked. And so I thought I'll put off making the decision until Saturday, where I had until 4 o'clock to really think through my team. And I really regretted watching Pendlebury score 146. So hopefully he doesn't continue to burn us, Mark, because he definitely started off exceptionally well after missing the last JLT with, what is it, a sore Achilles. It feels like he was sort of rubbing salt into the wound there. But Rocky 137. And then Mitchell, I ended up picking two, Tom Mitchell. And I hadn't picked Mitchell much most of the preseason, but as it got closer to lockout, I got more and more tempted, just hoping that he gets more opportunity in the midfield, gets more time on ground, and therefore sees a 10% sort of upswing in points. So I'll keep my fingers crossed on him, but like
I
you...
I think it's a good...
Sorry?
He's a good pick, mate. I had him for a lot of the preseason. I think he's a really good pick.
Mm. I think he got like 37 posies or something, like something ridiculous. It doesn't maybe do as much as I'd like from a Supercoach point of view with those posies, but 116, he's an absolute ball magnet. But one player I'm happy to be riding with you, Mark, in terms of the POD department is Tommy Rockliffe. By the time I found out about Swallow, it was pretty late in terms of options to trade into, but to be honest, it was probably Rocky or Pendlebury anyway. I would have picked Pendlebury and had the cash to do so. I had 77k remaining in bank heading into round one. I probably would have picked Pendlebury ahead of Rockliffe, but I think 137 is a pretty good start, Mark, and if he keeps this type of scoring up, hopefully he'll be a 125 POD for us. That'd be very nice.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure when I told you Rocky was in my team, you kind of laughed at me.
Yeah, I certainly did. But when Swallow went out, I was like, oh, Mark's clearly onto something here. So the late pivot worked okay. Tommy Lynch did all right too, scoring 100.
He had a really good last quarter. Lynch, he was really, really struggling with his scoring until then.
Hmm. In the forward line, the only player that I'm differing from you is you have Ryder, whereas I have Bow. So Ryder, what did he score, Mark, after one round? How do you feel about him?
He scored 87 in a win at the SCG. I think that he'll have plenty option to score a bit more on the bigger grounds. And, yeah, not dissatisfied having Ryder in there at all. It's just when you have a big point of difference and they go a little bit under even, it can really affect your ability to compete.
Yeah, so I'm guessing then you have Ryder and Nankervis as your permanent, like R2-F6 or R2-F7 or F6-R3 or what's the combo there? Where do you see them sort of finishing in your teams?
I see them finishing at F5, F6 or F6, F7 really. Like if they can keep up premium numbers, I see them as premium forwards basically, cheap premium forwards rather than really ending up in the rucks, I guess. Unless, like, if Sanderlands went down, I could imagine one of them ending up in the rucks, but I don't imagine myself having like a Ryder Sanderlands ruck combo at any, like, for a long time.
Okay. So you saw that the overall premium forward scoring was potentially dropping in 2017, and with two genuine number one rucks available in the forward line, you sort of see them as legitimate top six options.
Yeah, I'm probably more worried about Nankervis in that role. I definitely saw Ryder. Look, I picked him hoping for a 100 plus average, so I think that will easily compete with the top forwards.
Yeah, and that's fair. I was considering him late in the piece when I was looking for a bit of forward line value, but couldn't quite put him in my team at lockout just because, you know, I got burnt pretty hard on him a couple of years ago, Mark. But I was a little bit surprised because I know you're quite hot on him, and then I felt like you went almost completely cold on him at one point in the preseason, and to see him end up in your team was interesting. But I hope he works out for you.
It's interesting probably for our listeners to sort of track the way that we've talked about players and how that changed over the preseason, because you do get new information as the preseason goes on, and it was just that third game where he rucked solo, and it just brought back so many memories of Ryder that he is a terrible player unless he has like the number one grip on the ruck, and it looked like Port were going to give him that, and so that will hopefully lead to some good scoring.
Yeah, I know in my own team, Mark, Tui, O'Meara, Mitchell, Probably all surprises to our listeners in terms of ending up in my team. So I think you tend to get focused on sort of the JLT series and how players are performing as the preseason progresses. But the closer and closer you get to lockout, you start getting drawn more to the factors that you were looking at right at the start of the preseason. For you, it was Ryder being a number one ruck, still having that opportunity, regardless of his JLT performances, will mean increased scoring in the season proper. And so you finally pulled the trigger on it. So,
well, I think that's what you're supposed to do. I think that you are supposed to take JLT into consideration, but ultimately back your research and back the players that you think will score the most, because a lot of these premiums are not putting up huge numbers in the preseason. The ones that interest me are probably Hanbury and Heppel. I think they had both really similar JLT scores, and both like way underperforming in the JLT. And then Hanbury continued that in round one, but Heppel went like 100 more points than Hanbury. So like getting a prediction based on JLT scores regarding premiums can be a very tricky business.
Yeah, so a good first round. That's enough from our personal update. We'll move on to a group update quickly now. Our top scorer in the Supercoach Coach group for round one is Matt March to Victory with 24-29, a massive round one score. Matt is sitting 13th in the comp at the moment, which is absolutely fantastic. So congrats to you, Matt. You started off some PODs such as JJ, which worked out really well. Had the courage to stick with Bont. Bernie Vince in the back line at 114. One of the blokes that had the foresight to pick Jack Steele, who's performed quite well after only round one. He also has the Sandy Witts combo, so a bit similar to our teams as well. Structurally pretty similar, just hit the right premium. So massive congrats to you, mate. It's a good start. Hopefully you can keep it up. Let's get to the actual show now, Mark. We'll start off with this first question. Are you concerned about rookie scoring, Mark?
Yeah, look, you've got a lot of people making their debut in round one, and it is hard to smash out a big debut, even though like Andrew McGrath and a couple of other people did. So I think that, look, you've got to see improvement from a lot of these guys. But yeah, I'm definitely concerned about rookie scoring because our benches and the scores on them are pretty bad. And like you got Hibbard and Pickett and Eddie scoring 30 or below. Like, that's really, really low, and that's going to be very hard to increase their prices if they continue to pump out scores like that. So, yeah, cash generation might be a bit of an issue, but look, I think that there's enough rookies that'll score okay to work out, and I think that there's some rookies that will be coming through over the first 8 or 10 weeks of the season that we'll be trading down to that'll allow us to make a bit of money, although you might be looking at using extra trades in order to get the money.
I'm not too concerned. We had Hampton and Otten disappointing with 50 and 45, but I mean, that's pretty much the lower end of the scale in terms of what I'm expecting out of those two blokes. We've seen Otten average 80 literally like four seasons before, and Hampton's had much bigger scores than 50. And Adelaide won against GWS, which means that you'd think that they're a fair shot at a top 4 team this year. So that should help their players scoring as well. Pal Pepper 78. Jared Pickett, I mean, he scored 28, sure, but he's a former number 4 draft pick. He'll get plenty of opportunities, even if not consistently. Toronto, we've seen, you know, score 95s in the JLT and then now is only scoring 44. Jack Bowers is known as the Rolls Royce. He scored 64 on the weekend in his first game debuting. I mean, there's a lot of potential upside here, and I'm not particularly concerned. You had Jared Witt scoring 81, Hoskin Elliott 88, Marchbank 97. We still have O'Meara's mid prices. Steele looks all right. You've got Sanderlands. And even if they're poor rookie options in round one, you'd hope that kind of means that there's more rookies that are just not getting the opportunity at the moment, like you said, Mark, and will show themselves in the next few rounds. It might take trading out a player that's potentially not maximized, so you're trading them out before they reach their peak. But you know what? That's just sort of what we have to deal with. I've never really been through a season, especially now that we have 30 trades, I've never been through a season struggling to upgrade to a full premium team.
I guess the counter argument to that is that we've had expansion teams since we've gone to 30 trades. So, and then we don't now. Like last year, we had the exception of Essendon with the extra rookies there. So, look, there is some chance that things are actually different this year, and we're going to have lower scoring, lower output, lower cash generation rookies. So, and I think that I guess the other side of that is that most of us have at least two or three mid-prices in our team. To hopefully, they might end up becoming premiums or something. So, look, I think that it's just a little bit early to tell. And next week's show should be very interesting. Because I think next week I might come on and go, it's time to panic. Oh, my God, I need to trade all my rookies out.
Interesting, right? Interesting. Well, it's good to see a difference in opinion. We'll see how that transpires over the course of the season. All right, we'll move on to the injury-affected players now. I think this is probably the most relevant Supercoach section for the week, Mark. This is where I'd be focusing most of my attention on. We'll graze the underperformers and trade-ins after this, but it's more of an FYI. The injuries are players that you potentially want to deal with because they're not coming back. So we'll start off with this question here from Gary Real about Joel Smith. He's asking whether he should wait a week and check the lay of the land or just trade him out this week. So Joel Smith, very unfortunately, those that picked him ahead of Hibbert, even though Hibbert scored 23, Smith, just because of an unfortunate injury, ends up being a worser pick. He's out for 4 months now, Mark, but would you wait another week just to get more information about the player that you're trading in? Presumably it's going to be a rookie, like for like, or would you just go ahead and pull the trigger this week?
100% I'd be waiting, mate. I guess if you can swing some DPP to get a rookie that you don't have that's demanding to be picked, but I can't see any cheap ones out there that really are. I guess in the back line, if you don't have Stewart, he might be someone you trade to. But yeah, I think that you'll have a lot more information if you just wait a week. Selections might be a bit different this week. I don't see Hannon and Butler scoring in the 90s every week. It could be two other rookies. So, or even though you have the information, he's going to be out for a long time now. I think waiting a week will give you better information on who you bring in. And look, if you have to make two corrective trades next week and they don't include Smith, that's not actually a big deal. There's been plenty of times where I've seen coaches keep their eighth defender for quite a while without making any money and it's turned out okay. Or you might have players that that turn up over the next two or three weeks. Like with Rampy going down, does Nick Newman get a game and does he become a really good selection? So yeah, I definitely would be holding on a week, another week if it was me.
It's definitely not the end of the world. I would definitely hold on as well. And in general, again, we don't recommend trading after only 1 week. So that's absolutely a good call. And the next question here is for Grant Robson. If Swallow doesn't get up for this week, do we trade? Issue is who to, because all the rookies seem to be spuds this year. Again, I'd answer this pretty similar to the last. If Swallow doesn't get up for this week, hold on another. Because if he gets up for the week after, is the equation different? Would you potentially keep Swallow next week? I mean, Mark, you're in this scenario. Would you keep Swallow next week if he is playing?
Look, I think that the one that stands out to me is Steel, like Swallow to Steel, I guess, not having Steel myself. But that would actually require two trades because I don't just have the money sitting there because it is sort of like a 70,000 difference, I think. But like you said, like there's the other sort of obvious one that I don't have is maybe Andrew McGrath. But then, like, I expected him to score better than the preseason, but I also, like, they've said pretty clearly that he's not going to play every week. Like, there's some issues there as well. So if Swallow doesn't play this week, I'll still just be looking for more information over the week. It really, really sucks to have a $280,000 guy miss 2 weeks. But hopefully he comes back and plays quite well.
When I'm looking for round two trades, Mark, what I'm really looking at is not necessarily who I want to trade out, because that's really dictated by injuries, and it's very unlikely you get two injuries prior to round three. What I'm actually looking at is who do I actively want to trade in? Now, in years where a lot of unexpected rookies bob their head up in round one that you weren't expecting it, that you were like, shit, I need to squeeze in. Those are the years that you tend to look at trading in round one because, hey, next week I might want to trade in a mid-pricer and a rookie. There looks to be two really good rookies I missed out on. So if there's one absolute sure thing, I'm going to trade him in round one. Now, this year we're talking about the rookies being so absolutely awful, we're thinking about panic trading. If we're at that stage, then no way in hell should you be considering trading a player out because it means we're so short on options that next week you're basically deciding whether or not it's worthwhile trading in a player that you missed out. And so you're unlikely to have three trade-in targets. To me, if you have three trade-out targets before round three, you need to have a serious re-evaluation about how you spend your preseason time and how seriously you take Supercoach. Because, I mean, if you take Supercoach seriously, you've spent, what, 5 weeks picking your starting team? And after 1 week of scoring history, you're ready to throw that all away because of literally 1 week scoring? Like, it doesn't make sense. So unless you see three trade-in targets, I'm not over-eager to trade this round is my general sort of strategy. And this year, there's not enough sort of attractive rookies to do that.
With that said, Marcus, I think we do need to acknowledge that it is a bit of a natural reaction to want to trade out half of your team if you didn't go well.
Yep.
And that is just a, like you said, you've got to back in your players and you've got to back in the selections that you made, unless you've made a really clear error or there's a role change that you just weren't aware of.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is a natural sort of mental inclination to just want to get rid of some of these guys. Like, Treloar lost to Pendlebury by 50 points. I need to trade Treloar to Pendlebury. That is something that people would actually seriously be considering, but it's, no, you shouldn't be doing stuff like that.
Absolutely, Mark. And therefore, I think when you look at a player like Steele, you need to say, well, not what's the potential upside with Steele, but like potentially what did I get wrong with the player that I'm trading out? And if you can't actually actively identify enough, then you should probably pass on trading. So that's why I don't even really want to get into why Steele is potentially a good or not a good pick this week, because to me, it's irrelevant. Unless you have a player that's so terrible that he needs to be traded out this week, then wait another week on Steele. I mean, he's not going up in price yet. So I'm not going to comment on Steele, even though, like you, Mark, I think he might be a decent selection we may start on. We'll move on to the last injury-affected player now. And this question is from Sam Foreman. What to do with Nick Riewoldt? Hold for a couple of rounds and trade to another premium, or there's risk that might linger on for longer and therefore sort of get him out now. He's a premium, and so you could trade in a premium that will score 100 plus instead of potentially Taranto, who scored only 44 last week. I mean, this is a scenario where you actively consider just getting rid of Riewoldt this week.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one because you need to assess sort of what you were just saying then, like, was Riewoldt a mistake to pick? And if you don't think that's the case, and based on how he performed on the weekend, he wasn't a mistake to pick,
yep,
then I'm not sure that you should be trading him out, because although you're going to get two rookie scores for 2 weeks, there's going to come a lot of times during this season where you have to keep premiums that are injured for a week or two and cop rookie scores. This is going to be something that you will have to do, otherwise you will completely run out of trades. There's a temptation earlier in the year to burn trades to cover 1 or 2 week absences, and that tendency is a lot stronger. But what I've learned for over the last number of seasons is that if you make them, then you actually have to maybe cop a 3 or 4 week injury later where you're playing a rookie, which ends up costing you more points. So look, if you believe that Nick Riewoldt will be back in 1 to 2 weeks, which is what it says on the injury list, and given Nick's history of recovering from injuries, that would seem like it would be fairly truthful, then I would personally be keeping Riewoldt, and I would hate it, and it would completely suck to have to do it, and it might even cost you some ranking points over the first month or so, but I would still be doing it.
I agree with that advice, mate. It's a 23-round long season, not a sprint. You're not going to win Supercoach in 4 rounds. If you back your judgment on Riewoldt, which I would, again, like you said, Mark, after 1 round before he got injured, he scored like 105 or something. I wouldn't look at trading him yet. We move on to underperformers now. JJ's got a question here. Should Hannes get back on the piss so he can pump out 120-plus again? If you did pick him, what would you say to those coaches? I feel awful because, I mean, I thought surely not sort of one of the worst scores he's ever pumped out in round one in 2017, yeah, after swearing off the piss and losing a grand final. Like, what the hell were you doing, mate? Hannebery, come on.
Yeah, and look, that's the thing. Sometimes players do actually post their worst score of the year in round one, and sometimes they post their best score of the year in round one, and it is hard to make assessments based on that. It's the worst score Hannebery's posted for a number of years, though, so look, something is wrong there. There are sort of rumours swirling around about injuries, but I can't confirm any of that. I didn't actually see the Swans game because I was on the way to the Essendon March on the weekend, but from what I've heard, there was something wrong with Hannebery. He wasn't right. He wasn't himself, and that's something that you'd want to keep an eye on for one more week. I could understand people with Hannebery just going, it's not going to be right this year, it's not going to work, there's something weird, there's something different, and just moving in week one. I've seen that work in the past, but it's an extremely aggressive move and it could definitely backfire on you. He could go up to average 110, 115, or the trade might not work, or you might run out of trades. There's a lot of downsides to potentially trading him out this week, but I wouldn't recommend anyone to do it, but I could potentially understand if in just some circumstances you actually would go the trade. I'm guessing you would say keep.
Yeah. Even if that were the case, I think wait another week to sort of get verification of that. This week would be the week that if you expected Hannes to be fit and healthy, you'd say, hey, mate, you fucking made a massive point about getting extra fit this year and turning around a grand final defeat, and you start round one with an absolute crap show. How are you going to back this up, mate? Like, seriously, how are you going to back this up? Like, his pride's got to be on the line more than me, because I've backed Hannebery, but he's backed himself, and he's performing on the big stage, not me. So I would hold on this week, see how he goes. I would expect Hannebery to score big and change people's minds, Mark.
And if he scores 140 this week and you traded him out, you'll be looking for that delete team button. So getting at least one more lot of information is a really good idea. And look, next week you might be like, okay, I'm going to trade Hannebery down to Steele and I'm going to upgrade one of my crappy rookies to another mid-pricer, or you might want to restructure your team a little bit. Getting more information is always good, especially as soon as we get a free shot at it this week without price movements.
100%. All right, next question. Adrian Binns is asking about Patrick Cripps. He was going for a POD, but we know Cripps had a limited preseason, so that was kind of the knock on him. Faz brought him up in the first preseason show, and Mark, you knocked that back pretty quick due to injury concerns, and we haven't been too hot on him since. So he's one that I guess you could say potentially you might want to trade him out, because there's more reasons there than concrete reasons, at least than with Hannebery, in terms of why you should trade him out. But even with Cripps, like, sure, the first week's going to be tough because he had a limited preseason, but you assume the second game would get better and the third would get even better. And I mean, the unfortunate part is you've already selected him. So it literally costs you a trade to make a change, and a trade has an opportunity cost attached to it. If you use the trade on Cripps, you can't use it on someone else. So the question is, could you use the trade on somebody else instead of Cripps, whether that be an injury trade down the line to replace a rookie or whatever? So at this stage, I think after 1 week, you know, even though there's more reason to trade Cripps out, it's still the same bucket to me as Hannes.
Thanks for the economics lecture on opportunity cost there, mate. Look, if the dodgy preseason wasn't enough to stop you picking him to begin with, you shouldn't be changing your mind now, I don't think. I know that was a really crap score, but Cripps is a gun, and he has the potential to be a super coach gun, and at some point this year, I imagine he will fire up. And he's someone that this person obviously really likes barracking for and having in their team. So, yeah, I would be keeping Cripps.
The next question we have here is from Brad Judd about Grundy. He didn't do particularly well on the weekend, and that's brought up a little bit of angst because Max Gorn did smash out a 128. Sanderlands did score 107 off a 300k price tag, and Witts did score 80 off 200. Nankerve is also 114 off 366. So I definitely understand the increased focus on Grundy's underperformance due to his competition's sort of strong round one performance. But having said that, I would still tend toward waiting one more week before making a decision on that. Max Gorn, for example, there's talk on him having a little bit of back soreness, Mark, this week.
Please be out. Please, Max. I spent the entire last season saying, please, Max Gorn, don't play this week. Please get injured. And he never bloody did. So I love Big Maxie and I don't want him out of the game. But if he could just miss a couple of weeks, it'd be really helpful.
Conscious and wary of alienating some of our listeners who did go ahead with Gorn. But
just on Grundy, like, yeah, you picked him to average 105, 110 this year, and I think he's a really, really good chance to do that. And round one has not changed my mind on that. So, yeah, I'd find it very hard to trade Grundy out, hard to trade a fit player out that you expect to score quite well.
Yeah, agree with that. Especially after Goldstein, after one round, potentially doesn't look as commanding as a certain R2 as we were potentially touting earlier on. Scored 105 against West Coast, which we know, they have got.
You'd expect him to score more.
That's right, exactly right. And West Coast, we know, Mark, this year, that I mean, they're dealing with injured rucks. They got Nick Nat now out. They got Lysette out. So 105 against them with goals under his belt isn't particularly inspiring. So that, if anything, that would, for me, inspire a little bit more confidence in Grundy. And Proust playing too for North. Surely that's got a factor as well with Magic Door still out the team. So Grundy, I definitely wouldn't be trading out. Could still legitimately be the standout R2 for the year. You'd really regret that. So next question here is for Jake Richardson. He's asking about Rage trade moving on Jared Pickett. Now, we've talked about premiums so far for rookies, Mark. I mean, I'd like to move past this pretty quickly. I don't think there's any sense to Rage trading a rookie.
Who are you trading him to?
Exactly right. You're side-swapping rookie to rookie, which is even less reason to... you want more exposed form on the player you're trading in.
And there's no good rookies, like, screaming out to be picked. So, like, if Pickett's going to keep playing games, his dual position, like, unless someone absolutely screams to be picked this week, then you just got to keep him.
Yeah. All right, Mark. So, it's been a little while now. The show's gone longer than I thought it would. So, originally, we were going to talk about trade-ins. I'll list out some of the trade-ins we were going to consider and reasons why I think we should just leave it for next week based on the conversations we've had so far. So Curtis asked the question about jumping to Murphy. Ryan asked whether Steele is a steal. We had questions about Andrew McGrath after a commanding performance, Will Hoskin, Elliott, and Marchbang and their importance. At the end of the day, I think trade-in targets, you want a little bit more sort of scoring history on them. Murphy is a mid-pricer. Next week could as easily score an 80 as this week, him scoring 120, 130. Steele looks great after one week, but just, I mean, he only scored 113. So,
can I just say on Murphy, mate? Scored round one last year, scored 123, pretty similar. And then literally did score an 80 the following week, and then a 60, and then a 36.
Yep.
So,
that's so bad.
Shout out to Tom and Steve, a worker, who have given me a fair bit of shit for telling him not to pick Mark Murphy. But just wait on him. Look, he was in my original team at the start of the preseason, a bit like Heppel, and showed nothing in the preseason. So, I did rate him early on. Yeah, he sort of blew me away on the weekend, but that's all right.
I know you would have felt the pang being a Murphy 11, so we'll make sure to get to it next week. But the bottom line is, when you're looking at trade-in targets, I mean, there not only needs to be a commanding round one performance, there needs to be enough across the preseason to point toward them being able to do it on a sustainable basis. And I mean, at the end of the day, one round is one round of scoring, so we're not going to make a call on most of these players straight up. I think if you are looking to definitely trade out certain players based on injury, so if you were certain on Swallow, which, you know, even though Mark and I aren't, I mean, fair enough, you have a different opinion, then maybe you'd consider it. But for me, Joel Smith is the most likely you'd trade out this week, and everybody else I'd almost wait and see on. So we won't go through the trade-in options anymore, Mark, unless you have any further comment.
My further comment is, this was supposed to be the short podcast, mate, and we've recorded a bit of an epic one.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what next week's show is going to be like, because there's actually going to be stuff to talk about.
Yep. Well, hopefully we've covered some of the content this week then. All right, so before we head off, let's just go to a quick captain's corner. Who are you looking at this week, mate?
I went 5 over Dangerfield last week, so maybe you shouldn't be asking me. I think Danger, though, he destroyed North round 12 last year, so I would be expecting him to maybe do the same again. Vice captain, I'd love to go Selwood, but he plays for the same team, so I'm maybe looking at Treloar or Rockliffe.
So if you have Darcy Cameron like myself, I would be picking Treloar or Pendlebury, depending on who you have. Martin, if you're lucky, as a vice captain. But otherwise, I'm going to make some calls based on who I think the other sort of loophole opportunities you might have. So Joel Smith is missing this week. Obviously, Melbourne play Carlton at 3:20 on Sunday, in which case I'd probably go Dangerfield as your vice captain at 1:10 on Sunday. It's always best to give your top scorer player the shot at VC and then have a backup if that's available. So yeah, if you have Joel Smith, to me the obvious one is Dangerfield. You only need to be conscious of the fact that the only remaining games are Melbourne, Carlton, Port, and Frio. So you have to pick your captain from those teams. But most people have Fife. So Fife is a fairly decent captaincy backup mark. So I'd go Dangerfield, Fife if you had Smith. If you have Strandica like yourself, Mark, Frio are playing last.
Fife as well.
That's right. So you'd be in the same scenario as that. I think that should cover off a majority of the scenarios. Some other players that you might consider would be Rockliffe against Essendon. He scored 137 in his first round. I still think he's keen to prove a point, and so he could be one that would look to continue his form.
Marcus
into
has
a
jumped
game.
On the Rocky drain.
I'm pretty excited. Last thing to mention, don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach to support us. And to those of you who have, a massive thanks. So that's been long enough a show. It's been longer than we thought it'd be. So we hope you got some decent content out of that. And we'll catch you again next week. All the best. See ya.
See ya.